welcome back to the Crimson Playhouse podcast. I'm your host, Crimson Renee, and I'm so excited that you're here for episode 3. Tonight, we're diving into chapter 4 of The Velvet Muse. But before we get started, let's take a quick moment to catch up on what's been happening in Liza's world so far. Previously on The Velvet Muse. In chapter 1, Liza Thornberry arrived back in Baywood Heights, staring down the once glorious jazz club her father built, The Velvet Muse. The club is her inheritance, her burden, and her second chance. But stepping inside again meant stepping into the past. With the help of her childhood best friend, Marcy Owens, she took the first steps toward reviving the club. However, one name still lingered in the air, like an unfinished melody. Mason Harris, the man who shattered her heart before she left town. In chapter 2, Liza settled into her father's old apartment above the club, only to wake up to the sounds of construction. Mason and his team was downstairs. The man she had once loved was now in charge of the renovations, and their first encounter was anything but smooth. The unspoken tension between them crackled as they exchanged sharp words and unresolved emotions. Mason assumed she was only back to sell the club, and Liza made it clear she wasn't going anywhere. In chapter 3, the weight of the past grew heavier. Mason's presence loomed, his lingering stares and quiet frustration proving their story wasn't as finished as either of them wanted to believe. As Liza struggled to focus on rebuilding the club, Marcy introduced her to someone new, Maxwell Hayes. A charismatic saxophonist with effortless charm and a deep appreciation for music. His presence was an unexpected contrast to Mason's broody intensity. And for the first time, Liza found herself pulled in two different directions. But just as Maxwell made his interest known, Mason reminded her that he was still here, watching, waiting. And now, in chapter 4, Liza finds herself standing at a crossroads. With the Velvet Muse coming back to life, two men circling her orbit, and emotions rising faster than she can control. Will she find the strength to face what's in front of her? Or will the past keep holding her back? Before we jump in, don't forget, if you want early access to new chapters, exclusive bonus content, and a little behind-the-scenes action, come on over to the Crimson Playhouse Patreon. It's where all the magic happens, and I'd love for you to be a part of the play club. All right, it's time. Dim the lights, let the music take over, and step back into Baywood Heights. This is The Velvet Muse, Chapter 4. Chapter 4. The next morning, I arrived at the Velvet Muse with a fire in my chest and a checklist in my head. Mason's words from yesterday, his silent departure, the unresolved tension, it all simmered just beneath my skin. But I wasn't about to let any of it throw me off course. This place had to come first, no matter how much chaos swirled around me. Marcy, as always, was already there, her laughter ringing out from the bar. She sat perched on a stool, coffee in hand, and beside her was Maxwell Hayes, his presence like a shot of adrenaline to the room. His freshly styled locks gleamed under the sunlight, filtering through dusty windows, and his grin was the kind that could disarm you before you even realized you were vulnerable. "Morning, boss," Marcy called, raising her coffee in a mock toast. I dropped my bag on the counter and eyed Maxwell, who looked far too comfortable for someone who had barely met me. "You're back early," I said, crossing my arms.
"Well, you didn't exactly say no to my offer," he replied smoothly, that same grin curving his lips. "Figured I'd stick around and see if you needed help."
I raised a brow. "Help how?"
"Promotion, for one. Maxwell said, leaning back against the bar like he owned the place.
If you post on social media, my followers eat up a good comeback story, and this club has got one waiting to be told.
I hesitated, studying him. Why are you offering to help? You don't even know me. His grin didn't falter, but something shifted in his gaze, a flicker of sincerity beneath the charm.
Because I believe in good stories, and this place has one. Plus.
He leaned in slightly, his voice dropping just enough to make my pulse jump.
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't looking forward to spending more time with you. You strike me as someone who makes things special.
Marcy let out a low whistle, nudging me with her elbow. Okay, Maxwell.
Girl, you'd be crazy to turn down free promotion from him.
His name alone will pack this place. I exhaled, trying to focus. He was so different from Mason. Confident, bold, and almost too smooth. But Marcy had a point. If I wanted the soft opening to succeed, I couldn't afford to let my pride get in the way.
All right, I said finally, offering him a small smile.
Thank you, Maxwell. I appreciate it.
His grin widened.
You won't regret it.
Over the next few days, the Velvet Muse transformed slowly but surely, its once dusty corners breathing new life as Marcy, Maxwell, Mason, and I worked side by side. But beneath the surface, the tension was as thick as the sawdust coating the floor. Mason wasn't just present. He was everywhere, finding reasons to stay longer, hovering close whenever Maxwell was near. I had no proof he was eavesdropping, but it felt like it. Whenever I shared a laugh with Maxwell, I'd catch Mason glancing our way, his jaw tightening just slightly before he returned to his work. Despite his proximity, Mason's conversations with me were clipped and professional, as if he'd drawn a hard line to keep himself in check. But the cracks showed. One afternoon, as we tore out an old office cabinet, Mason looked at the mess we'd made and muttered,
"It's like your dad built this place with spit and prayers."
The comment caught me off guard, and before I could help it, I laughed. A genuine, belly-deep laugh that felt like a tiny release. Mason blinked as if he hadn't expected me to find it funny, and then, for the briefest moment, he smiled. Later, as I struggled to pry up a particularly stubborn floorboard, Mason appeared behind me. Without a word, he handed me a crowbar, his fingers brushing mine just long enough to send a shiver down my spine.
"Try this,"
he said, his voice low and steady. I nodded, unable to form words as he stepped back, his presence lingering long after he was gone. By midday on the fourth day, the club was buzzing. Maxwell had claimed a corner at the bar, snapping photos and sharing them with his followers. The room crackled with his energy, vibrant and magnetic. Across the room, Mason worked in silence, his movements precise, his focus laser sharp. The contrast between the two men was impossible to ignore. Maxwell was the spark of excitement, while Mason was the slow, smoldering fire you couldn't put out. Every so often, Mason would glance toward Maxwell, his jaw flexing just enough for me to notice, and I wasn't the only one who saw it.
"If looks could kill," Marcy whispered as we sorted through more of my dad's old records.
Then, with a sly smile, she added,
"By the way, Andre and I exchanged numbers." My eyebrows shot up. "Oh, what's going on there?"
Marcy shrugged, but the blush creeping up her cheeks betrayed her. "He's sweet. We've been texting. He even asked me out, but with terror and everything, I told him my time's limited. He understood."
"Well, I like this for you," I teased. "Someone around here deserves a love life that isn't a complete disaster."
She grinned. "Speaking of disasters, you've got Mason glaring at Maxwell like he's plotting his downfall, and Maxwell's over here charming everyone within a 5-mile radius.
You might want to figure out what you're doing before this turns into a full-blown soap opera.
He's fine, I said, though my voice lacked conviction. Marcy raised an eyebrow, unimpressed. You know Maxwell's into you, right? Before I could respond, Maxwell looked up from his phone and caught my eye. His grin lit up the room, and my heart stumbled in response.
Look at that man, Marcy whispered. If you don't want him, let me know. I'll take him off your hands.
I laughed, but inside my thoughts were anything but light. Maxwell was kind, talented, and easy to be around, but I wasn't sure I was ready for what he was offering, especially not with Mason watching my every move. Later that afternoon, Maxwell approached me with an idea.
We should do a preview performance before the soft opening, he said, leaning against the bar. Just a few songs to get people talking. We could set up outside, keep it small and intimate, and stream it live. It could create a buzz and get the community excited.
It was a brilliant idea, but something about Maxwell's easy confidence made me hesitate. I'll think about it, I said. He nodded.
Take your time. I'm not going anywhere.
As he walked away, I caught Mason watching from across the room. His expression was unreadable, but his hands clenched and unclenched at his sides, a telltale sign of frustration. But before I could say anything, he turned and headed for the exit. I followed him outside, catching him just as he reached his truck.
Mason!
He stopped, sighing as he turned to face me. Are you leaving already?
I have other jobs to check in on,
he said flatly, opening the truck door. I stepped closer. My tone softer now, questions lingering in my voice.
You don't have to spend all day here, Mason, but you do. Why? Why are you here every day when you have other jobs? Why do you keep watching me?
I searched his face, trying to poke a hole in the armor he wore so tightly.
Tell me.
He froze, his hand on the door, and for a second, I thought he might actually answer. His eyes met mine, dark and unreadable.
What do you want me to say, Liza? That I'm here every day to see you?
His words hung in the air, heavy with everything left unsaid. But before I could respond, he shook his head.
You might be used to being the one doing the leaving, but I have things to do.
Without another word, he climbed into the truck, shut the door, and drove away, leaving me standing there with the weight of his words setting into my chest. That evening, as the crew packed up for the day, Maxwell stuck around, helping Marcy move some of the heavier boxes. I watched him joke with her, his laughter filling the room. He was good with people, I had to admit, effortless in a way that made others gravitate toward him. Mason, on the other hand, the total opposite. I couldn't shake the lingering ache of his words. The man who had once been my everything was still here, tangled in the wreckage of our past. And the man who could be my future was standing right in front of me. Possibly something simple and good. But nothing about this felt simple.
All right, thank you so much for spending this time with me and stepping into Liza's world. I love sharing these stories with you, and trust me, there's so much more to come. If you're enjoying The Velvet Muse, make sure to subscribe to the Crimson Playhouse podcast so you'll never miss a chapter. And if you want more, you can head on over for bonus chapters and deleted scenes and all your exclusive content over at the Crimson Playhouse Patreon page. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that lets you rate or leave a review, it would mean the world to me if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Your support helps bring these stories to life and keeps the creative journey going. All right, loves, that's it for this episode. But don't worry, we will be back next week with another chapter, more drama, and even deeper emotions.
Until then, keep your hearts open and your playlists soulful. I'm Crimson Renee, and this has been the Crimson Playhouse Podcast. See you next time.